welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and then again, we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We encourage you to go to the link that we will have available to our guests, today's guest included, so that you can get more information, research, and investigate, see if it resonates with you. If it does, wonderful. Follow through, follow on. Carry on, if you will, down that path. If not, well, then keep searching. You'll find something, I guarantee you. We've been doing this for almost 9 years, and I would venture that we've probably hit on something that you will certainly enjoy. I know that I will enjoy today's program, especially because of a returning guest to the program. He's the author of, I believe it's the updated, if you will, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. It's a novel of theory of our origins. Carl Johan Kalman is my guest, PhD. Thank you so much for joining us again. It's great to have you back.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back, Richard.
I have to say that this whole aspect of the rise of civilization, there are those who are looking around today going, this must be the past. This must all be history, because I don't see much of a rise in our civilization today. Some would even look at the United States in particular, and they would be watching our political process, not just the current one, but we can go back 40, 60, 80, 100 years. And it is just like, is this how humans, if I was an alien, if I was an extraterrestrial coming from another world, watching this process and understanding the true heart of the human being, I'd question what it is that we're doing. Why are you speaking to one another this way and verbally going to war, as it were? And then all of a sudden, when the process is all over, saying, oh, it's all good now, let's all join hands, sing kumbaya, and move forward to a better life. And we've done so much damage in the process of the verbal warring and fighting and sparring and all of that stuff, that it's like, really, is this what the human race has succumbed to or come to or degenerated to? So maybe we won't necessarily start from that point, but let's talk a little bit about this aspect of, for those who have not heard the first interview, and I encourage you to go back and check that out. Let's define what you are referring to here, and in what tense you're referring to the global mind. What does that mean, and where is it taking place?
Well, the global mind is, you might say, it's a mental structure that we all share. And it's, you might say, there are waves that were described by the ancient Maya that are mediated through our Earth, and that we, to different degrees, are in resonance with. It's global in the sense that it's the same mental structures are accessible all over the planet. And yet we are, for a number of reasons, we are creating individual variety of this global mind as we download it. But this book, it describes how we're all in resonance with the same global mind. And the consequence of that is that there are shifts in this global mind that takes place on certain specific time points, where we can see that changes take place quite independently in different parts of the world. And from this we can gather that the same mind was downloaded all over the place. To give an example that this book focuses specifically on is the time when civilizations first arrived on our planet about 5,000 years ago, or if you want to be exact, the first downloading became available 3,115 BC, when a new structured mind, a mind based on straight lines and perpendicular lines, became accessible, and people in different parts of the world, like not only in Egypt and Mesopotamia, which are the most well-known cases of the emergence of a civilization, but also in places like Peru and Mongolia, people started to build pyramids, sort of external projections of a new mind based on straight lines and perpendicular lines. And this is just one example of many that I'm presenting in this book, that there is a wave movement of evolution of this global mind that creates similar phenomena at a specific time points in all over the planet. Before this time, people did not build pyramids because they had not yet downloaded this kind of a rational mind that was based on these straight lines and perpendicular lines. A shift took place, and this is really what all of human history is about. It is about downloading different waves coming from the center of the universe, which has created a certain evolution of our planet.
Well, I also am very much aware, and we've been grappling with this for centuries, certainly, and that is going from the physical and spiritual aspects of thinking that, you know, we place all of these separations. At one point in our human history, everything was separate, you know, mind, body, spirit. And now, and then, of course, then we went through a transition probably several times of realizing that there is no separation, that there is no, that they're all integrated, that they're all interdependent, if you will. And then we're also trying to figure out where these things reside. I mean, there's the theory anyway that, for example, emotion resides in the heart. That there, you know, there's even scientific evidence that shows that. But what you're talking about now, and we make this comment quite often throughout the years on this program, about trying to, quote unquote, raise the consciousness of our people, of ourselves and the people around us, so that we can live a better life. We can thrive instead of just survive, that we can be more conscious of one another and kinder to one another and so forth, and live in bliss and joy and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And there are those who are trying to define the location of that consciousness. And I guess it really depends upon your school of thought as to, or belief as to, where that resides, or even if it resides everywhere as opposed to some specific place. Like, oh, I don't know, we talk about the mind. You talk about the global mind and the rise of civilization. The mind, well, that's got to be in the brain, because that's where they tell us that we do all of our thinking. But the mind and the consciousness of man, they're not one and the same. They're not they are, in essence, if I'm correct, mutually exclusive.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's a conflict. When you talk about consciousness, I think of which is a word that's very hard to define, but mm-hmm. I think a higher consciousness is when you realize that everything is connected and how you are connected with everything else. The mind is something quite different. It's really something that we download, but it's something that separates, essentially. It's what allows us it's the basis of the creation of all technology, because we need a mind that sort of separates different phenomena in order to develop technology and so forth. And that, in that sense, I would say that mind and higher consciousness are more or less opposites. The higher consciousness is what sees the unity of all. The mind is what separates and allows us to you might say, intervene and transform nature. You know, whether that is good or bad is completely another matter. Mm-hmm. But I would call the two opposites.
There's another example that I'd like to use, and we see this happen, you know, quite often, that an individual will have some dis-ease, or they'll have an accident, and they will then go into a coma or a vegetative state, as the term is out here in the real world, if you will. And yet we don't have a clue as to what's really going on inside that person. Mm-hmm. You know, are they still, even though they can't move any part of the human body, they can't even blink or flinch or anything. And yet maybe they're just, in essence, trapped inside this body, and they're fully aware of everything that's going on around them, or they're absolutely aware of nothing. It's as if they were asleep. And then there comes that moment, that point in time, when there is a measurement by science, medical science, that the individual isn't there anymore. The body is there, but the essence, the quote-unquote consciousness, has gone. And I've heard of instances where, and there have been obviously situations where there's certain groups that do not want the plug pulled under any circumstances, because you just never know. I mean, you and I are both aware of people who have been in these kinds of states for decades, and suddenly they just wake up.
Yeah.
They just wake up.
Yeah.
Then there are others who suffer the same situation, and then finally they reach a point where they pull the plug, the body stops functioning, they do the autopsy, and they find out that, and I remember, I don't wish to be overly graphic here, but they did an autopsy and they found that the brain, in essence, had turned to pudding. I mean, there was nothing there.
Yeah.
And so you wonder, well, what were they keeping alive other than the body, the essence of who that individual was left long ago? What is that which I have sort of tried to describe here? That's a different consciousness than what you are describing, or is it connected to what you are describing?
Oh, yeah. Well, wow, this becomes a big, big philosophical discussion. I mean, I think it has to do to what extent consciousness is connected to the body, or necessarily needs the body or not,
mm-hmm.
and whether the body can also survive without consciousness. I mean, there's been these cases of people being conscious and then some life-threatening surgery has occurred, and you have seen all the brain activity disappearing, and the person, but the consciousness of the person surviving, so to speak, and going out from the body, leaving the body, and then sometimes coming back, so to speak. It seems like there is a consciousness that exists independently of the body. And this connects to my work in the sense that I'm really making the case in this particular book that the mind, at least, is not a product of the body. It's not our brains that create our minds. Rather, it is our brains that download consciousness and download the mind. So it's a big, you're going into this very old debate of a relationship between body and mind. And I think my book here, it gives support to the idea that the mind is not something that is created by the brain. The mind is something that actually comes from the global mind and is downloaded by our brains. This is an ongoing debate really goes to the heart of what it is to be a human being. Because, if if we're all connected, if we download the mind, it means that we're all connected to the same process of mental evolution. Otherwise, it doesn't quite make sense that each of our brains is creating a mind of its own. Because if that was the case, you know, I don't think we would ever understand anybody else. But we do understand others, and the reason is that we're all connected to the same global mind. We're all downloading aspects of that. It's not the mind is not an creation of our individual brains.
You know, I've talked many times and used the analogy, especially in 2014 when we did a series of programs here on Tell Me Your Story, one a month, called Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. And one of the conversations that we had dealt with mythology and science fiction, and specifically, I brought up the character of the Borg in the Star Trek Next Generation series. And though Gene Roddenberry probably did not intend it to be an example of our own interconnectedness, it was certainly, for me, as the observer, a prime example of how, even though you had all of those individuals, hundreds and thousands and millions of individuals who were all linked, that showed me, in essence, how we as human beings were all linked, even though we may not acknowledge it, may not be aware of it. Mm-hmm. And so then you start delving even deeper into this philosophical discussion that we're having. Yeah. That, okay, we talk about intuition, that still small voice, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Then I got into a discussion about that, and someone said, well, yeah, but you can't trust that voice, because how do you know that that's, quote unquote, the voice of God or the higher self or the universal power? I mean, there are people who have been said, God spoke to me in a voice and said, go do this. And from our perspective, they did horrific things. So, you know, how do you trust that? Mm-hmm. But without going down that particular road, the observation is that when we do listen, and you're carrying out your life's purpose, whatever that may be, and I'm doing the same thing on my end, right?
Yes.
But they're not the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow, if we are living our lives on purpose, fulfilling our life's purpose as we understand it and know it, our individual purposes somehow work together for a bigger picture that we just can't see right now.
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe another example to overlay over that is when you're traveling in your area of the world on the roads, highways and freeways and residential streets. And I have to say, it is amazing to me that we don't have more accidents, more wrecks, more injuries with the way people walk and bicycle and drive. It's like there has to be a higher power here that is keeping us all from colliding into each other.
Yes. Oh, that's great. I have thought exactly the same thing. I'm happy to hear that you're formulating it. Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, the very reason that we're not having all these accidents is that we are connected on some intuitive level. And I mean, many of us have been in situation where we sort of just barely survived in a traffic situation. But the reason we did, I think, was that we were somehow connected with somebody else in this big scheme of things. And I think it's an excellent example of how we are. I keep wondering about this. How come so many people survive the traffic that is all around us? But it is because we have this a unified consciousness. Whether we recognize it or not is completely a different matter, but I think that's a great example.
And then there's another element too, and that is that I know that, at least I think you've had this experience at least once in your walking or driving, or if you cycle or what have you, whatever the locomotion is, where you are in control of the vehicle or the forward motion, where you started out and you were aware of starting out, and then all of a sudden you find yourself at your destination and look around and go, how did I get here?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It adds even more credence to the at least the consideration that there is something else involved here. And then, of course, then there's the other aspect that I, from a scientific level, the only other thing I can think of is that when there are these accidents, when there are these wrecks and injuries and deaths and so forth, from a scientific perspective, there's some form of gravity slash magnetism or opposite pole type of thing going on here, where when we don't hit, somehow we're at opposite poles, so or at the same poles, so we repel each other, so we don't hit. Mm-hmm. And then there are those instances, and I think this is kind of where maybe the mind comes into play, because it is said that our mental capacity, we have barely scratched the surface of it. But when we're focused on, I mean, you're aware of people who are very pessimistic about their lives and about existence and, you know, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, this is terrible things going to happen and that terrible. And then all of a sudden, terrible things start to happen to them because they become magnetized. They become magnetized in such a way that they draw to them those events. So now you have the opposite poles that are sucking each other in. I mean, that's the only scientific explanation that I could come up with using, again, the whole aspect of gravity and magnetism. And I know that there's some correlation between the two. I'm not versed in it, but just as a theory.
Yeah.
Very interesting, I have to say. We're talking with Carl Johan Kalman, PhD. He's the author of the revised edition of The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. That's what we're chatting about here today. And again, for me, it's fascinating because to consider the possibilities of where we are today and where we are going to be tomorrow. And some would say, based upon where we've been, and that it is said, Carl, that we are where we are today because of the choices that we have made, past tense, the choices that have brought us here. So now we ask the question, where do we want to be tomorrow? So the answer is, that's going to be based upon the choices that you make today. However, it does not seem that humanity at large is making any new choices. And it's more on an individual level. I'm curious as to your observations on the global mind and this concept of consciousness that we're talking about and my interjection of choices as to whether or not we're going to make it or as some historians say, we're going to go around a sixth time, that we've done this five times before. We've risen and then we've wiped ourselves out and then we've started over. I don't know how we did that, but we did five times. And it looks like we're headed for number six. Your thoughts?
Well, to begin with, I think it's when I talk about this global mind, it is not a static structure. You might say that we all share in it, but it's a structure that evolves, and it evolves because we are in resonance with nine different waves of creation, and. Depending on which particular waves we are in resonance with, we will create different kinds of realities out there. So to a large extent, I would say that our choice is which waves do we want to be in resonance with. There's a number of different waves. Ever since civilization first rose on our planet 5,000 years ago, there's been different waves that have been activated. And they created different kinds of social realities, different kinds of technologies, and so forth. And these different waves have been activated according to a sequential scheme, you might say. And I think is an important basis for understanding where we are in the big scheme of things. Some of these waves, for instance, are creating resonance with a dualistic frame of mind, and what that means is that they create people. The people that are in resonance with tend to separate. The dualism of the mind tend to separate and create conflicts and so forth. That's really sort of the basic sixth wave, as I call it, that has created civilizations ever since it first rose 5,000 years ago. But on top of that, other types of mental frames, it's been possible to download other types of mental frames. And at the current time, what I look upon as very significant is that in the year 2011, the highest of these waves, the wave with the highest frequency that has ever been activated on our planet was, in fact, activated. And this is a wave that if you're in resonance with it, you will tend to see unity rather than duality. And your mind will not be separating to the same degree as a person who is in resonance with the sixth wave that is basically dualistic. And so if we look at the world today, we see a very complex mixture of phenomena and how people are relating to the world. Some people would emphasize one part of the reality, that the world seems to have gone crazy, and I think that is really what you started this program with pointing out. And I should say there that it's not. You were mentioning that things going on in the United States and probably a lot about the politics here and so forth, but it's not a phenomenon that's limited to the United States. You know, I was in Peru recently, and where they've just had coming out of an election process, and I was reading the papers, and some thoughtful persons were saying that it seems rationality is completely gone, and people are just throwing, being offensive and throwing insults on each other in this kind of thing, not much unlike what is going on here. And this is, it's a reflection of the change that is taking place in the global mind. That's why you see it in different kind of places. You could probably go to any European country today and you would see parallels to this kind of craziness that we would have seen as crazy for, you know, only 10 or 20 years ago, that is coming out. And it's a big shift, and I don't want to make any simplistic descriptions of what is happening. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say that there's a long-term change that is taking place because of the activation of this wave of unity, the ninth wave that was activated only 5 years ago. But as that happens, there is a tremendous turmoil. It's not just that people will jump out and see that now we're all together and happy and so forth. It's a huge structure of civilization that has been developed through 5,000 years of these different waves, and it will go through, I believe, a very chaotic process where it will seem that people go crazy, and even people in official positions in a way that we really haven't seen in the past. But at the same time, I think that that's what my work is about. It's really possible to see that there is an underlying logic underneath all of this. And it's not just that things, for no reason, may be going crazy. It's an underlying logic. And if we are to understand that, we will have to understand that our minds are not, as you and I talked about earlier, our minds are not the products of our brains. They are actually part of our minds are downloaded from waves that come from the center of the universe. And in that sense, you know, I would even go as far as saying that it's all part of a divine plan. But don't expect that to be completely simple it's a complex story. And I think it's very important that we learn where are we now in this big scheme of things, because a couple of years ago a significant shift took place in the kind of waves that we're all in resonance with.
We're going to talk more about those waves, and we're going to talk more about this whole aspect of a quote-unquote divine plan as we continue talking with our guest, special guest here on the program. Glad to have him back on, Carl Johan Kolleman, PhD. The book entitled The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, also having to do with the quantum evolution of consciousness. And we'll continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. It's great to have you with us. And my special guest, Carl Johan Kolleman, and Kolleman.com is the website. We encourage you to check his information out. I think that it would be extraordinary for you, because what I find so interesting, Carl, is the fact that in my early years in this business, I was working for a religious radio station, a Christian station, and I was there for, to present day, that is the longest I've ever stayed at one job. 15 mm-hmm. years. That's a long time for anybody to stay in one position, let alone in radio. Second longest is now where I'm working today, and I've been here almost, let's see. I won't even go with the math. In any event, and the issues that were being dealt with over the course of time were so, and I'm going to say so frustrating to have to deal with, because I saw so little willingness on the part of the people at that time to consider the validity of other people's ways of thinking and believing. And the real irony was, as I talked with individuals, no two people believed exactly the same thing, in spite of the fact that they all seemed to adhere to at least a general belief system.
Mm-hmm.
But they all, each one of them, had their own concepts, which I thought, wow, this is unique from my standpoint anyway, that they would have that. I mean, my gosh, how can they justify having that belief when it is almost contrary to that which they say they're a part of, this particular group, you know? And that was one of the things that kind of struck me was their willingness, and that's really what it was, their willingness to embrace or to consider other possibilities. I interviewed a devout fundamentalist Christian many years ago on this program who practices, are you ready for this? He practices out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, and my understanding of the scriptures that he lives by, there is basically a passage that says that it is appointed to every man once to die, then the judgment. So you only get one death, in spite of the fact that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Was he really dead? And so forth. We won't go there. But this gentleman was willing. He said he saw no conflict. He had no inner turmoil, no guilt, no shame, you know, and so on and so forth, that you would think that he would, because there's nothing justifying that activity, if you will. So when we are talking about groups, or in this case, global mind, we're talking about right now roughly 7.5, maybe it's 7 3/4 billion people. which means that there are 7.75 billion different perspectives on the world, different minds. And somehow, as you have alluded to, they're all interconnected, if that's the right term.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's almost as if, for example, the United States has had to go through the past 200 and plus years of fighting for this exclusive individuality and liberty of person in order for us to get to this new place. Mm-hmm. Where we begin to realize, and I would take it that this has something to do with these waves that you said come from the center of the universe, and that's fine. I'll take that, even though I don't know where that is. I have no map, but let's set that aside and say, okay, they come from the center of the universe, but who started the wave or waves? These nine waves. Why are there only nine? Are there more? And so forth.
Oh,
again, another huge question, I understand, but we've got the time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no, you're raising many different things at the same time. And I think if you look at this planet, you probably find 7 billion different religions.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's fine. I mean, it's just great. We have our individual religions, if you call it that. I think the only problem is really that we don't recognize it as such. It doesn't. To a lot of people, they feel they will lose their adherence to some group or something like that if they actually admit that their own belief system is their own individual religion. But to me, that's just great. It would just be better if people recognize that this is the case, that there isn't these huge common saying, all Christians think alike or all Muslims think alike.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that at all. I would want to say, but yet. They have this sort of primal adherence to some kind of a belief system, at least as they present themselves to others. So that about that. Then came you raised the origin of these waves
I'll actually even take it back a little bit further. How did you find out about these waves that exist and the fact that there were nine? Where did this information come from for you?
Well, it's part of my history of studying the Mayan calendar. And because the Maya developed, the ancient Mayan people developed a calendar system that is unique on our planet. It's unlike all other calendar system. It's a calendar system that is not based on the physical reality. It's not based on the astronomical cycles. Which may be for those that have been visiting the Mayan area down in Yucatan and so forth, it may be surprising to hear that is calendar system that is non-astronomical. But that's really what it is, and we don't have anything else like that on our planet. And so then, of course, the question arises, if it's not astronomical, if it's not based on the physical reality, what is it based on? And what I found then was that, that's about 25 years ago when I started to research this, was that this calendar system actually was matched up very, very well with certain significant processes in human history. And then the next step is simply to recognize that this calendar system describes waves of evolution, like peaks and valleys, as any wave, and that these peaks and valleys represent peaks and valleys in the evolution of human consciousness. And another kind of worldview emerges where you recognize that the kind of external reality that we are creating, in other words, our technologies and our social realities and so forth, really is an expression of our inner reality. But our inner reality is then subject to our resonance with waves of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I first then got acquainted with these waves through the study of this ancient people that for some reason developed a unique, they were in tune with waves that were not really described by other peoples. And to them, they would build pyramids down in the area that were built in 9 levels, like terrace pyramids, and they would climb these pyramids as part of rituals and ceremonies and so forth, and they would climb it as steps on a ladder to heaven, if you like. And so to them there were only 9 waves, and I'm convinced that is the case of the reality we're living in. There are only 9 waves, and we are now, for the first time in human history since a few years back, we're now living in a reality where all those waves are active in parallel, and we can download all of these waves. They're all open for us to be in resonance with, but we will have to choose what waves to develop resonance with and how to do it and so forth. But this is the reason. There are a number of other reasons that I won't go into, but that I believe that the 9th wave is the highest frequency wave of evolution of this particular universe. And at the same time, we should recognize it's only been accessible for 5 years, and meaning that, you know, if you should be born completely into this kind of wave, you must be below 5 years of age. And so the people that are have a thoroughly potential for being in resonance with this particular wave, they're less than 5 years, and, you know, presumably will take at least 20 years until these people come in a position where they're actually creating or having a significant say in how our world and our society is being created.
So each of these waves carries with it a particular, shall we say, attribute of consciousness?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay.
Or state of mind, state of body mind, attribute of consciousness, yes.
And what kind of overall time period are we looking at? Is it just, as some would believe, you know, we've only been here for 6,000 years, but, you know, there's, if you accept carbon dating and those kinds of things, it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. There are even those who say that there's evidence showing that man has been here for tens of thousands of years. And as I said earlier, that, you know, we have been born, lived, thrived, and then annihilated ourselves 5 times previously, and we're headed, and we're headed for number 6, or maybe it's 4, and we're headed for number 5. Be that as it may. Mm-hmm. So what kind of time frame are we looking at if we can look at it from that linear aspect of these waves? And this is number 9, and it's in our generation, in our time, in the 21st mm-hmm. century. But what about the other 8 waves? When did the waves begin, as far as you're aware, according to the Mayan calendar?
Yeah. They began with what in physics or in physical cosmology is referred to as the Big Bang, meaning it goes back 16 billion years into the past. That's when the first wave was activated, and which only carried a certain attribute of consciousness, to use your term. It did not create any higher life forms than singular cells. And then on top of that, other waves have been added according to a certain mathematical system. On top of that, that has increased the complexity, and then ultimately not only biological species have been created through these waves, but also the mental structures of and the spiritual spirituality of these of the human beings that have been added to this through other kinds of waves. And these changes, if you know, just adhere to, like I do, to, you know, accept basic carbon dating and the techniques for dating the past that is used by modern science, you will find that there are a very, very strong adherence of these waves, or I should say of the evolution of species to these waves that were initially described by the Maya and described by them as sacred waves, as divine creation waves. And this is kind of a worldview that emerges that doesn't separate or create a conflict between evolution and creation. Rather, it is like evolution is a product of divine creation waves, and then we're all products of and our entire reality ultimately are the products of these kind of waves. And it's not something that happened 10,000 years ago or something like that. It's an evolutionary process that follows essentially what established science is saying, going back billions of years to the, you know, the very first burst of energy that we have come to call the Big Bang a long time ago.
I'm curious also because you're very well versed, obviously, in the Mayan history and the tradition and obviously the calendar in particular. And, you know, we're almost coming up on the 4-year anniversary of the end of the world, depending upon your perspective of the Mayan calendar, because some people were just out of their minds over the fact that, well, the Mayan calendar is ending, so human existence must be ending. And it's like, no, they just stopped printing. OK, just because just because they stopped printing the calendar doesn't mean that there is no more. It's cyclical, you know. And I always found that rather humorous. And, of course, the only equivalency I could come to was Y2K.
Yeah.
And I remember December 31st, I had finished my shift at the radio station in that morning, and it was a Friday. And it just so happens that every Friday or every other Friday, I would take my car and I would go fill it up at the gas station. Mm-hmm. And this woman came tearing into the gas station saying, I need to hurry and get my gas filled and da-da-da because the computers are going to go haywire, blah, blah. And I told the woman, I said, look, it was noon or 1 o'clock our time. And, of course, the change had already taken place, like in Australia and other places on the other side of the international dateline. I says, you need to calm down. Nothing's happening. Nothing is. And then, of course, I had to do the same thing with 2012, December 21st.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I scheduled knee surgery for December 22nd for that very day. And it went great. I was, you know, I was up and running around within, you know, that afternoon. So it was a good day for me.
Yeah.
But I'm curious as to this aspect of the waves, and I don't know if you've done any comparative research or not, or study, or if anybody else has, in regards to these waves and the other religious teachings, holy writings, if you will, whether it be the Gitas or the Quran or the Bible or other religions of potentially the other 7.5 billion religions, that describes in any way, shape, or form this same concept that the Mayans were talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, I certainly, you're bringing up great topics to talk about. And so I first of all, I need to comment on this thing with the end of the world, Mayan calendar. I mean, it's something that idea has absolutely no foundation in any kind of Mayan source. It's just a fact. There's absolutely nothing. And it's not. I wouldn't say that any contemporary Mayan person would have associated that particular shift point with the end of the world. So it does raise the question, of course, why are people wired in that way that they, you know, you just. You mention a date,
yeah.
And then it just turns into the end of the world.
Friday the 13th.
it's just some kind of wiring but it should be said that this is entirely made up by modern people, that's the first thing to say. The second thing that you're raising is something that I have dwelt a lot on, and I should say that this the book that is coming now, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, is a precursor to a second book that is coming in December from the same publisher that will be called The Nine Waves of Creation. And where I really deal a lot with this question that you're talking about, the question whether you see correspondences between the waves of the Maya and the big religions of humankind, the more famous religions like Christianity, Islam, and Hinduism, and Buddhism, and so forth. And the answer is absolutely yes, and. But it seems like each religion it highlights a certain aspect of the truth, and they don't come out saying exactly the same thing. But on the other hand, if you have the framework that is provided by the Mayan calendar, you can understand much more of what these ancient religions or the big religions of humanity actually wanted to convey. To give one, I think, clear picture is to see the correspondence between the Mayan calendar system and the Book of Genesis, where it's, you know, the whole idea really is about the divine creation in 7 days and six nights, or it's actually 6 days, and then God resting on the seventh day. And of course, if you remove the idea that these days are some kind of a usual, common, singular days, day by day, as we think, but actually look upon them as part of these waves, then it all starts to make sense, because a day then is a peak in the wave movement, and the night is a valley in the wave movement. And then you can start to track these 7 days and six nights, and they are not at all sort of singular days, but you would find that the first wave that we just talked about, starting at the Big Bang, its days and nights will be as long as 1.25 billion years. But you do have exactly that structure, 7 days and six nights. And it's not something that is sort of contrived or so on. It's something that really falls into place with the datings of modern science, if you accept that. And you will find also, when you study Chinese mythology or Hindu Buddhist mythology, you will find numbers and their cosmological correspondences that fit perfectly into these Mayan waves. I would say that even if the Maya were the ones that really made a calendar of it and a sharply timed process. It's clear that people in other parts of the world were quite aware of these processes as well, sort of like an intuitive process. They may not have been able to develop a calendar around it, but they had the sense, yes, there is a wave movement. And 7 days and six nights, that's one example of such a wave movement. So there will be a lot of that looked upon in my coming book, especially. And another aspect that I will dwell on much more strongly there is the concept of the serpent, which is, you know, you may wonder, why is this such a huge phenomenon in all the world's mythologies? And you know, coming back to the book of Genesis, you mm-hmm. have it this, playing this role. But you can go to the Amazon and they will say that the world was created by this big anaconda, or you can go to any number of places and you find that the serpents are very significant. And the reason I would say is simply that the serpent is a reflection of this wave movement. It's like a sine wave. There's nothing else that moves like a sine wave than the serpent. And that's the reason the serpent has become such a ubiquitous symbol in the mythologies of the world. It symbolizes waves.
Let me ask you why the Mayan civilization, and obviously in particular the calendar, are so intriguing to you that you have, I mean, in essence, you've sort of made it your life's work. Here's book number two, and three is on its way. That you focus so much energy on this aspect of this particular civilization. Why that focal point for you?
Well, it's not exactly true what you're saying, especially not the coming book. I don't really talk about the Mayan civilization at all, but the reason is that their calendar system is the only. Without that, we can't make sense of how the universe evolves or why we are who we are, I would say. It just has such a tremendous explanatory power. And that's why it is of interest to me. It simply explains things that you can't really explain through other mythologies or cosmologies. The fact that they have a calendar system allows us to sort of test whether there is a higher power creating this universe or not. Because the calendar, you know, what that would mean would be that whenever there is a shift point in the waves, you would see some kind of changes going on of a specific kind in human life. And you find that. And then when you see that, you know, you are on the grounds of empirical science. It's not just, you know, somebody preaching a sermon of abstract ideas about the divine and so forth. They may be very wise, but you never get the chance to test it unless you have this kind of a background in something where you should match the evolution of the waves with what actually happens. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I have been so attached to it. I think it has an explanatory power, and that's what I'm looking for primarily.
Well, I know that, certainly Isaac Newton and gravity and the apple hitting him on the head, I don't know if that's mythological, metaphorical or actually happened, but and I wouldn't even know what to call it if I was to, say, drop something on my foot to try to prove that gravity or whatever other name you could want to call it. I mean, that's just the name they gave it. It could have been mm-hmm. called Blotto for all we know. But I can prove that that exists in the sense that if you drop something, it will fall to the ground. Now, my perspective of that was because I'd always learned that, of course, the Earth is like a big giant magnet. And at the same time, I'm generally understanding of the concept of gravity. But I always felt that when something fell to the ground, as we describe it, actually it's not falling, it's being pulled by that magnetic force. Apparently, I'm not sure if I have that correct or not. Maybe I'm right, or others say no. It's not a magnet. That's gravity. I said, well, then you know, but I can prove that. But there are those who base their existence and their day-to-day living on the beliefs of these respective religions. These I'll call them philosophies to be broader. And one aspect in particular that I know is a little divergent from what we're talking about has to do with the existence after this life. Now, you've already defined or at least alluded to a divine presence, a divine power, if you will. I mean, you have a great quote in the front of the book that says, "What if human civilization is a product of an evolving global mind field that we are all part of? What if this is a divine mind that that always influences the way we think?" Now, that sort of detracts from some separate entity, if you will, that is calling all the shots. You know, in Christianity, there's God. And I've always believed, or I did for many years, that it was God's way or the highway. You know, you either did it his way or you burned in hell. And by the way, last month I went back to Phoenix to visit my folks for their 60th wedding anniversary. And my wife says that she's now realized that Phoenix is where the devil goes for a vacation. But that aside, there are people who live their lives saying that they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is an afterlife, that there is a heaven, the Vikings, Valhalla, and other religions, they have other names for it. There are people who have dreams. They'll have those out-of-body or near-death experiences where they have seen these places of heaven or hell or a place of torment, on and on and on and on. And yet, nobody really, really knows. Nobody absolutely for certain knows that there is, because nobody has been there and then come back. So and this really does sort of tie in, because you talk about these nine waves, and of course, I guess from an observational perspective, you can see the evolutionary progression of man over the thousands and thousands of years, as you describe in the book. So I guess that's kind of where I'm heading toward, in that you're looking for explanations, and I am too. I mean, I think we all are, but just because we're looking, the question then is raised, how do we accept the explanation that we find? I mean, how can we be sure that it's, as the phrase goes, primary source information? Like, how you get primary source information about the existence of the afterlife other than from the sacred writings that have been left behind by people who died before they went?
Wow. I don't think I like to go into that, because I can't. I don't think I have much to add about it.
Okay. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I was just curious as to your perspective. And the other aspect, too.
I may have my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, you know, because we're all part of the divine, nothing really dies, and there may very well be some kind of recycling of souls and so forth. But I wouldn't claim that I have any factual basis that on. It's just something I have as some kind of a concept. And
we're all in the same boat, basically. We all have our beliefs, and of course my own personal perspective is that this existence doesn't make any sense whatsoever if this is all there is. It just doesn't. Logic dictates that what would be the point of going through all of this And then, of course, you can go back to many of the ancient wisdom teachings from all of the different philosophies, and many of them speak about these concepts in at some level of similarity, if you will. They're not identical, but there are some similarities. And so you can, and I get people asking me all the time, you know, do you believe that there is a life after this? Because I'm afraid that there isn't, you know, and it's amazing how fearful people become.
Yeah.
About
yeah.
there not being an afterlife, that when the body dies, the lights go out and that's it. And mm-hmm. and all I can tell them is, from my perspective, that is totally illogical. Why would we be given the capacity for the logic and reason, you know, and investigating and these kinds of things, the emotions mm-hmm. that we have, the relationships, you know? It seems kind of, you know, the whole thing. If that were the case, and I was able to tap into the meaninglessness of this life because there was nothing after this, mm-hmm. then it doesn't make any difference what I do anymore. I can go out and rape and pillage and plunder mm-hmm. because it doesn't matter. But there's something inside me, that intuition.
Yes, the connection.
That says, no. Your life has meaning. Your life has purpose.
Yeah.
You know, and to a greater point, Carl, I think that question, though I've kind of belabored it considerably, is a moot point, because this is where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Good said.
Yeah. And so we're dealing with the things that you have revealed, at least in your latest work, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, A Quantum Evolution of Consciousness, as well as this being a novel of the theory of our origins. And again, everybody has their own perspectives. But I do find it interesting, and maybe you can elaborate on this, about, because you mentioned it earlier, the Mayans had a particular type of pyramid. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a sort of a staggered stepping stone type of mm-hmm. thing. Whereas in Egypt, they had the smooth sides.
Yes.
And by the way, I don't know if you heard this or not, but at least as far as those pyramids are concerned, they're now saying that there were no stones that were dragged. They were actually created via forms that were then poured concrete into. In other words, this structure was built right where it stood with concrete, in a manner of speaking, or what their equivalency yeah. of was, mm. you know, which sort of answers that question. And instead of all of the alien stories yeah. and so forth.
Yeah.
But can you talk to us a little bit about, if there is a significance beyond the Mayans, but in general, the concept of the pyramid and why that was an important feature?
I'm happy to. I think there is somewhat of a difference between the early Egyptian pyramids and the later Mayan pyramids, because it's probably 3,000 years between them. It's amazing how old the Egyptian pyramids actually are. But from the perspective of these waves of evolution that I have been describing, they're not placed randomly in time. In other words, 5,115 years ago, a new wave was activated, the sixth wave in the Mayan calendar system. And what the Maya described as happening at that particular time was sort of a shift in global consciousness. They describe how the four directions were downloaded, or actually they talk about the eight partitioning of the world. You might say the four directions plus the four meta directions, southwest, northeast, and so forth. So a global structure creating lines of resonance was downloaded, like a new grid was created all over the planet at that particular point in time. And you might say, well, what is that? Well, at least the Maya said that this is what happened. So what we then find happened on the planet was that people started to build pyramids at that point in time, at that activation of a new mind, you might say, of a new global mind. People started to build pyramids. And before that, people had not built pyramids. And so one way of looking at that particular shift was that this is a mental shift that for the first time somehow introduces the concept of straight perpendicular lines. So and the result, if you look, you know, especially in Egypt, is that they built, for instance, this huge Cheops pyramid, which is eight-sided, and which is exactly what the Maya talk about, the eight partitioning of the world that took place 5,000 years ago, like a mental, global mental eight partitioning of the world. And as a result, people started to build these pyramids, huge pyramids, reflecting this new global mind, which had straight lines, and they were perfectly aligned with the four directions. The Cheops pyramid's alignment with the direction of the north is just astounding. I can't remember the figure at this moment, but it's just something that the only way it could have happened has been by people downloading a new mental structure that allowed them for the first time to build things that had straight and perpendicular lines. And so that is what happened in several different places in the world, not only in Egypt and in Mesopotamia at that point in time, but you find pyramids 5,000 years old in Peru and in Mongolia and in several places in Europe. And so the way I look upon it is that the minds of people changed when this new wave became accessible, and they wanted to express that. They wanted to honor the source of this new mind, which actually allowed them to create a civilization, to create cities, to create writing, to create numbers, to create calendars, to create the wheel, etc., etc. All of these things came from the downloading of this new mind. And to me, it just, we may wonder, why did they build these pyramids? Well, to me, it's not a strange thing, really, because if you recognize that this new mental structure was the source of their civilization, then it's just not natural that you would honor the quote-unquote gods that have given you this new mind that has allowed you to create civilization. Then much later, like 3,000 years later, the Maya started to build pyramids in the Americas, and there were other peoples in the Americas that created pyramids, like in the city of Teotihuacan, and later the Aztecs and the Toltecs and so forth. But they had somewhat of a different message. They were, as we mentioned, they were typically built in as terraces, in as terrace pyramids, and they were more not just sort of a big pyramid, but there was calendrical information built into these pyramids that talked about the patterns of evolution that the Mayan calendar describes. So, for instance, if the most significant pyramids, if you go to southern Mexico in Palenque, in Tikal, in Chichen Itza, they are built in nine levels because they recognize that there are nine waves, and each of which creates kind of a different mentality, a different world, and so forth. But there are also other kinds of pyramids that are 13, or they are 7 steps, or 13 steps, and or 5 steps, and you can all see that these different numbers are connected to time periods within the system of waves that they describe, and so they tell us a more refined message, I would say, about the nature of the cosmos that we're living in.
This is interesting because you're taking me down a road here that the next area that I want to touch on before we have to wrap up here, and we are running out of time, but I wanted to touch upon this. This is something that I was hearing about, believe it or not, at the Christian radio station. But again, these were people who had individually different beliefs and concepts about things. And I started hearing about this concept that you talk about in this book that I heard about back in the 80s called sacred geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was astounded by what I was hearing because I'd never heard of it before back then. And I'm really not that all acquainted with it now. All I know is I didn't do well in geometry class in high school, But I know that it is something, it is a factor that has to be considered in this whole process. Tell me about the role of, maybe we should define first what sacred geometry is, and then what is the role in all of this?
Yeah. Sacred geometry, I think people in general, they think of certain fairly complex studies of geometry that were made by the ancient peoples. And people may talk about the so-called five Platonic bodies, which are like the cube is one example, the simplest one of them, and others. Or they talk about the golden mean, how you divide a distance in a certain way to create the most harmonic relationships in architecture and so forth. And people talk about something called the flower of life, which is a structure of 20 different circles that are connected in a certain way. And in ancient times especially, but also maybe the past 30 years or so, it's been revived in the modern society among some. People would develop these kind of geometric structures as a means of elevating themselves spiritually or even contacting the divine. So that's you might say it's geometry. There's nothing. It's just an aspect of geometry, but it's the aspects of geometry that seem to be useful for spiritual elevation, for creating a contact with this higher intelligence that pervades the universe. What I'm bringing in this book is to say something that's a little bit different and say, well, sacred geometry does not have to be so complex structures as we have been used to. That, you know, in fact, the simple straight line is a very amazing aspect of sacred geometry, because where does it come from? Well, it doesn't come from our brains. There's not our brains doesn't have any straight lines. And really, if you look out in nature, you hardly find any straight lines. You might say that if you go around digging for crystals, you might find some short straight lines, so to speak. But I would say that the simple straight line and the perpendicular line to that, which was then again the four directions that the Maya described as was downloaded as to our planet as a planetary grid 5,000 years ago, that is sacred geometry as well. You know, it may seem very simple, But when we start contemplating the straight line, you actually do have an access to some kind of an higher intelligence. Because I mentioned this with the eight, that the big pyramid in Egypt is eight-sided, really. There's basic four directions, but it's eight-sided. And you have that kind of eight partitioning, these eight lines, the four directions and the four meta directions, like northwest, southwest, and so forth. You will find that if you just look at a Christian cross. And you would, if you go into a church or a mosque, you can be certain that there are these kind of structures dividing the perpendicular lines and so forth. And because it is an aspect of sacred geometry, and contemplating these straight lines and contemplating where do these straight lines come from, that is a way of accessing contact with the higher divine. That is sacred geometry. It's just so simple or so all-pervading with these straight lines that we have stopped thinking about it. We don't think about that as maybe the source of creating our civilizations. But when we actually start to look into how civilizations emerged and have evolved and so forth, we will find that straight lines are absolutely necessary for this evolution. And that what I'm saying here is that these straight lines are like a gift from the divine. Mm-hmm. And when the ancient Egyptians built pyramids, they did so in honor to honor this particular sacred geometry that allowed them to create civilization. So I think there is a connection here between many different things, where sacred geometry, straight lines, and pyramids, cities, and civilization, and the mind, the global mind that brings to us the possibility of creating resonance with these lines, ultimately emanating from the divine. These things are all connected, and that's really what this particular book is about.
This is, to me, very fascinating, and I'm looking forward to having you back on the program when this next book does come out.
Thank you.
And we'll talk further, and even extending an invitation to you join us in studio if you should find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area. We would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because there's so much to it, and we don't want to, I mean, maybe some folks are already feeling a little overwhelmed. Well, take your time, go to the website, you may get a copy of the book, and take your time reading through it. It doesn't seem to me like all of this, in spite of everything that we've talked about in this hour, almost hour and a half, Carl, it doesn't seem to me to be overly complicated. It seems to be relatively simple, but there are just a lot of elements to it. Mm-hmm. And when you start placing the layers of elements one on top of the other, and you make sense of them, then they all sort of come together and the puzzle pieces start to fit. And as you said before, you're just investigating all of this. It's intriguing, to say the very least, and to find some explanations as to who we are, why we are, where we are, and where we're going. And a lot of that has to do with, as they say, you know, where we've been. And so I encourage people to check out the website. Again, it's Kalleman.com, Kalleman.com. The book is entitled The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, The Quantum Evolution of the Consciousness, A Novel Theory of Our Origins. And Carl, I want to thank you again for joining us. You know that it's been a year since you've been on the program. You're on the program last August, and here you are again. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you back on maybe in January of 2017 to talk about your new work.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Once again, the title of the book is The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. Carl Johan Kalman is my guest, PhD, and we encourage you to check out his website, Kalman.com. I'm Richard Dugan. Until next time, love Talal.